Coming up on Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Interesting. I can't think of many other industries where there's one company which is dominating the market, like student finance in the UK does. There's no competition.
Is it acceptable to eat cereal for dinner?
Because the institution does not get the money unless the student actually gets a job paying above certain threshold.
And he has a phenomenal knack for the act of our circus performance.
How much do students that opt for an income sharing agreement end up paying as a percentage of their salary over however many years it is?
Welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Hello and welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. Coming up on today's show, we're asking, can fintech change the student finance game?
So, what do we have on the agenda today? Well, today we'll be taking a bite out of the student loan market. Earlier this week, we spoke to Mariano Kostelek, the co-founder of studentfinance.com. Studentfinance.com are aiming to transform the student finance market with a privately funded income share agreement. So stick around to hear Mike grill this particular big cheese.
But first, who better to talk to about student loans than the students themselves? This week, we sent producer Eddie out to ask the students of Middlesex University how they'd feel about a private firm paying their tuition as part of an income share agreement. Take it away, Eddie.
Would you be open to a fintech paying your student loans?
Possibly. I suppose it depends on how well you know that private company that's going to be offering you the loan and then you repaying them back. So it almost seems like they're just trying to reinvent the wheel. So I don't really know if there's much worth in doing that through other private companies.
And as a student, do you currently find it tough to budget?
Yeah, budgeting's always tough at university. I think as the years go on, you work out for yourself where you think you're hemorrhaging money or where you think you're particularly good at saving. And near the end, you kind of find your equilibrium. But it definitely helps that everyone else is kind of in the same boat.
And lastly, do you think it would be good for student finance companies to be faced with a new challenger in the market?
Yeah, it would definitely be interesting. I can't think of many other industries where there's one company which is dominating the market like student finance in the UK does. There's no competition, which normally will never, ever be the case. Like, there has to be competition guidelines. So yeah, I mean, if there can be other companies offering the same kind of platform with similar loans and similar repayment schemes, yeah, I don't see why not. I don't see why they get to be unchallenged in the industry. The student finance scheme is relatively and well thought out, with having the threshold. If you're earning below, you don't even have to end up paying. But of course, the issue then is you just start accruing more and more interest, which remains unpaid. So definitely, I mean, if there can be different ways of tackling student loans, new approaches which may help some people, yeah, there should definitely be a variety of ways and different avenues that people can decide between to see what suits their particular financial position.
If there was a company offering to pay your entire tuition upon an agreement whereby once you earn a salary, they take a portion of your income, do you think that's something you'd consider, or would you be concerned in any way, shape or form?
I'd have to say that I don't really see the difference between what we have now, just because we have to pay back our loans after we start earning a certain amount anyway, so I don't really see the difference, to be honest.
Would you feel more or less comfortable if it was a private firm? Do you think you would think maybe that because it's a private firm that could go worse rather than the government?
Yes, I'd rather it be the government.
Why, would you feel your money was safer if it was the government?
Yeah, definitely.
And how do you find budgeting as a student generally? Is it something you find hard? Do you feel that you and other students need more help?
Yeah, it's really hard. I think there should be more guidance on how to do this, especially because we've not had to do it before and it's just tough sometimes.
Thanks for that, Eddie. So it's now time to hear from Mariano of studentfinance.com himself. And remember to stick around for the 2020 return of Skittlemania.
Time to fire up the hot seat as Mike welcomes another guest in to grill the big cheese.
We're joined today by Mariano Kostelek, co-founder of studentfinance.com. Mariano, thank you for joining us. So can you tell us, what is student finance all about?
So student finance is a platform that we partner with education institutions to support their students with income share agreements. So instead of paying upfront to study, they have the option of attending those programs, let's say for free, in exchange of a share of their future income. Mm-hmm.
And what led you to start student finance? What was that moment that said, this is something I need to do?
So there was a few things. It wasn't just like, let's say, the one moment. It was more a combination of things. I have another company called UniPlaces. We focus on student accommodation. So I had that concept of education and affordability for a long time. Students were asking about how to pay for the rent, you know, in that case, but more broadly about education. So the concept of affordability was there for a while. But second, what actually was very interesting for me was that there's a huge shift happening today in the education space, led mainly because of the change in the job market. There's more and more need for specific skills that don't exist today, you know, and like that's pretty much what people call like a skills gap. And there is more and more of a need to cover that gap. And a lot of institutions are moving to that space. But actually what's missing there is a tool that actually connects the education with employment while removing the barriers financially. And, you know, thinking of all of these concepts was actually what led us to launch what Student Finance is today.
And how's it all going? Studentfinance.com is a relatively new company. What's the next few months or few years? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so we started about a year ago. So we are obviously still early in the journey. We've already set up our operations in a couple of countries in Europe. We have a number of schools already offering ISAs to their students. Our objective is to become a fully, let's say, pan-European platform so we can actually work with schools all over Europe, from the UK, Germany, France, Spain, elsewhere, to support their education. So what we're building now is the entire infrastructure for these to be able to operate at scale. Mm. And infrastructure is everything from, you know, how you verify, validate the profiles of the students, you know, that assessment that you need to do, how you verify income. And then the last part is obviously processing all these payments from all these countries so you can actually support. So that's the on infrastructure side, that's what we're building. And the other part is the capital side. So obviously schools can offer income share agreements, which pretty much means that they're delaying their revenue. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they cannot do it, you know, for older students without more capital. So we actually have a, let's say, a fund where we are providing capital upfront to the institutions so that they can obviously operate, always with the concept of what we call a risk share. Mm. So the schools participate, obviously, in the repayments and have that incentive of making sure that people get a job and, you know, the quality is there, the admissions process are good, the quality of teaching is there, and eventually it all works out. So, you know, we're building that entire infrastructure with the objective of really be that platform to support this at scale. Mm.
And what countries are live at the moment?
So at the moment, we're operating in the Southern European countries. Uh-huh. So Spain and Portugal is where we started our initial batch, let's say. It's mainly also because from our other business UniPlaces, that's where we have the strongest presence and networks. And we've also seen there's a very large number of schools and institutions really wanting to move to this model. Mm. But we are now working on 2020 for this year to be live in the UK, in the Netherlands, in Germany, and in a number of other countries.
And you talked about the skills gap, and studentfinance.com, I think it's quite clear about obviously wanting to fund certain in-demand areas. You talk on the website about software engineering and cybersecurity, kind of these jobs of the future that we all know are going to become even more important than they are today. And these jobs, I guess, have the potential to earn people a lot of money if they study for these courses. And yet not a lot of students really choose to go down those routes, right? We've got a lack of students that want to go down the cybersecurity or engineering routes. Why do you think that is?
I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, why are people not actually going there, a lot of that comes to that people don't actually know what are actually the, let's say, the skills that companies, employers are looking for, you know, and that's actually one of the big issues. A lot of these fields you mentioned, cybersecurity, are quite new, you know, and like they're not, you know, people don't know. It's very rarely that your parents would tell you, hey, you should study cybersecurity, you know, because, you know, when they went to university, that didn't exist, you know. And I think a lot of work still needs to be done on bringing the transparency as to what are the actually, let's say, jobs, or even not just jobs, but actually skills that are in demand today. Mm. And as people learn that, you know, they will be shifting to the actual programs and courses that are clearly training for those jobs. And when we say educate, we're saying, you know, people entering the education early in their careers or, you know, as an undergrad, but also down the line, you know, people want to change jobs, reskill themselves. They need to know what actually are companies looking for, you know? And then when they learn, when they know that, they need to know how they can get there. And that's when, you know, you can actually start offering those kind of programs and courses that are clearly aligned with those specific skills.
Mm-hmm. And income share agreements, it's quite a new concept here in the UK, which is one of the reasons why we wanted you to join us today. Do you think that it, as a concept, it's going to be applicable across the globe? Do you think there are certain countries where it's going to work really well and certain countries that it won't? And how do you view the UK? You've said that you want to come into the UK and launch in 2020, but we've got, you know, a robust government-owned, not-for-profit lender in the marketplace at the moment. So how does the kind of dynamics of the UK market lend itself well to studentfinance.com?
There's a few questions there, obviously. One is like whether the income share model is applicable globally. And yes, it is. You know, it's something that there's no reason why in any country people could not actually use this structure. Actually, if you look at, even if you start understanding how the job market is heading and like what are the skills that are emerging as like, you know, companies from Brazil to China to obviously UK to the US, they look for, let's take an example, cybersecurity specialists, like you mentioned. You know? So, you know, if they look those people, there could be programs offering cybersecurity programs, which means they could have an ISA focus on that program. So from that perspective, it's clearly something that will emerge globally, and it's emerging already. We see actually schools in a lot of countries, from India. Today, we just found out programs in Vietnam offering this. Obviously, the US is a lot more advanced. In Latin America, there is a number of schools already with these models. So it is something that has started to emerge like a few years ago, but is really something that, you know, will be clearly evolving on a global scale. And there's no reason why that some countries wouldn't be relevant. Now, in the UK, when you compare the student loan system, you know, which exists in the UK, and also similar programs with different structures exist elsewhere, the US being the biggest or most extreme, where there's a huge student loan debt crisis at the moment. One thing that actually is important to understand about these programs is that, you know, people from any program can access, obviously, these loans. And then, obviously, if they don't have a job that can actually pay those loans, you know, they cannot make the payments, so they default on those payments, their interest balance accumulated goes up, and that becomes eventually, potentially, what you see today in countries like the US, you know, where there's a huge bubble. There's $1.6 trillion of debt. In the UK, it's over, I don't know exactly, but it's 100, 150 billion, I think, the loan balance today. Now, ISA is very different, you know, because first of all, ISA in the UK, you know, there is this ISA savings. We're talking here about income share agreements. This is very different because here the actual institution is aligned with the, has the same interest as the student, because the institution does not get the money unless the student actually gets a job paying above certain threshold, you know, which makes sure that the entire system is a lot more aligned to first training for the skills that would clearly create jobs, you know, which is actually really, really important. Second is making sure that people do actually get the jobs and earn that income, you know, and teaching to the right quality, you know, because if the teaching quality is not there, people will not get a job, you know. So I think that whole alignment of incentives and that whole structure of like focusing on the quality of job and employment outcomes, it's completely different from what you see in the student loan market, you know, which that doesn't exist. So what's happening is that, you know, like the schools that clearly know that they will deliver the value, they actually want to offer an ISA, you know. And what you're going to see as more and more schools adopt this model, what's going to happen, and you see it happening in places like the US in certain categories already, is that potential candidates for these schools are already asking if their institution offers an ISA or not. If it does, it's a signal that the school believes in the future of those people, believes that the value they bring is there, you know? And if they don't, then you can question it. Hey, why you're not offering an ISA? And I think that's why it's so powerful and it's being adopted really fast now, especially in courses that are clearly training for skills that are in huge demand. A lot of that goes with technology, data science, cybersecurity, like you mentioned, because there's a huge demand for talent in those areas. And it makes perfect sense. And I think as ISA get adopted at scale, they will eventually regulate or self-regulate or self-balance, let's say, the entire system, so that, you know, more focus goes on the programs and areas where there's a bigger employment demand, and obviously less where there's less demand. What happens also with loans, typically, it's like a school offering programs that
potentially don't have much employment demand, you know, people can get a loan, study those programs, but then don't actually get a job. And then, you know, who has then the burden of a loan is a student that has a degree that is actually, let's say, not useful potentially because there's no demand, has a debt burden they have to pay no matter what, you know, so they have to pay. And if they don't pay, the interest rate is accumulating and compounding. So they're just getting worse and worse off every day. You see, that cannot happen with the ISA. By definition, that cannot happen.
I think alignment of incentives is a very good concept. And actually that starts to make it a lot deeper than just how stuff gets financed and how a degree gets paid for, but how the market is evolving to make sure that it's delivering a product and a service that offers value to students, whether it's a one-year course or a three-year course or a four-year course. So under the income sharing, and it'll be interesting to kind of get your thoughts on or get examples from what's happening globally, how much do students that opt for an income sharing agreement end up paying as a percentage of their salary over however many years it is?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. And with ISA, the way this typically gets structured is on a program basis. Why is that? Is because you're looking at the income projections eventually of people going through those programs, mm-hmm. and also the cost of the mm-hmm. program, you know. So if the salaries of certain program are higher, you could actually make the ISA terms a lot different than if they're lower, you know. So that's why they're structured on a program basis. What we see at Student Finance with the schools that we're working with, which are mostly technology, coding, sort of short-term, let's call boot camp or vocational courses, you know, a typical structure is someone paying 10% of their income for 3 or 4 years. Mm. That's the typical sort of structure we see, but it could be lower or higher. You know, we see, you know, in cases like the US, where some universities have been adopting this model for even undergrad courses in some cases, the repayments, the monthly repayments are a lot lower, so like 5% maybe, but they could go for like 10 or 15 or more years, you know. Mm. So it's obviously short, less by months, but it's a lot longer in duration. Other examples, like a famous one that's pushing ISAs a lot, is Lambda School in the US. The payment is 17% of the income for 2 years. You know, so obviously they have those structures. So that depends exactly on like the reality of the employment market where the education program is actually focusing on, and, you know, the cost upfront, you know. So that's why it's structured on a program basis.
And of the students that have come to studentfinance.com, how many of them are like 18-year-olds going into their kind of first degree, and how many of them are maybe kind of a few years or a few decades into their careers and looking to kind of switch? As you said, cybersecurity wasn't something that was on anyone's radar 10, 20 years ago in any meaningful way. It's now clearly a really hot area. So how many, you know, do you think this is equally applicable to that 18-year-old going into their first degree? Or is it more something that after a few years, you kind of want to do something different and this is a model and a way of getting it financed?
Now, that's a very good question. So our model with Student Finance is, you know, let's call it a B2B model. So actually we work with schools who then offer ISAs to their students, you know. So when you say what kind of profiles are there, it depends on these specific schools. Now, the ones that we are focusing on working specifically at the moment, they're all schools of less than a year in duration, training people for software engineering, for data science, for UX, for cybersecurity kind of programs. They're in the shape of like boot camps, that kind of programs. And they do have both profiles, you know. So they do have young people that some of them choose these kind of programs instead of going to a typical undergrad university degree, you know. So it's, you know, they want to get their first job, and for that they want to get a training. So they're 18, 20 year old. Other ones are in their 30s or, you know, late 30s, who want to switch careers and do get a new job in a new area. The average age of these programs are close to 30 years old, so 27, 28, 30. So you have both profiles. And that's the good thing about these programs. You actually see that's where I was saying there's a huge shift in the education system, is because there's more and more of these kind of programs that are clearly, you know, focusing on specific skills. And, you know, people with 18-year-old are able to do that, same as someone certified. And the point is that, you know, in a short duration of time, they can really equip people with the skills that are needed for a specific job. You know, and like we're talking here mainly about high, you know, technology, digital profiles. It could be applicable also to other areas, but in those segments, you know, all age brackets seem to be perfectly good fit.
So income share agreements, very new concept in the UK, not so new in other places. And you talked about the US being kind of one of the more advanced territories out there, but something that we're starting to see all across the globe. If you have to kind of predict, so we're going 30 years in the future now, 2050, how big do you think it will be globally, and how big do you think it's going to be here in the UK?
So I think obviously it's a prediction from my side here. Like, I think you know, the majority of the education system will shift to income share agreements, programs that are, you know, we could separate, because obviously programs come short in duration, full undergrad, long term. I think the whole education system will shift massively in those 30 years. Even the concept of a typical 3-4-5 year degree probably will not exist, or will exist very differently as it is today. So I say it would probably be really the prominent way of accessing education. So I would say that for a lot of the programs, it would be the big majority, if not all, you know, programs will be moving to this model, you know, especially because there's a faster and faster shift in the education system, in the employment market, and you need to move to performance-based models that in pretty much any other industry are already in place. You know, education is probably one of the only industries where these kind of models that actually focus on performance and value add are still not in place. You know, and I think, you know, we are at the beginning of a huge transition. But if you project 30 years down the line, I think we'll be almost all the way there.
Well, Mariano, thank you for coming on the Money Bites podcast. As I said, income sharing to fund education, it's a very new concept in the UK, and we really look forward to seeing how it evolves. It's now time for Skittlemania.
And now, get your chopsticks ready. It's Skittlemania!
We put 30 Skittles into Cup A and given our guest a pair of chopsticks. Over 90 seconds, Mariano will attempt to transfer as many Skittles from Cup A to Cup B, whilst answering some of the silliest questions the Smart Money People team can muster. Let's see if Mariano can seize the Skittles and climb to the top of the Money Bites leaderboard. Mariano, are you ready?
Yes, let's go.
Let's go, your time starts now. Who would be your dream dinner party guest?
Dinner party guest?
Yes.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. What's your favorite colored Skittle?
The purple.
Purple. Well, there's two for Mariano so far, so he's doing quite well. Do you prefer Christmas, New Year's, or birthdays?
Christmas.
Christmas. What animal would make for the worst university professor?
Giraffe.
A giraffe. How many times in your life do you think you've sneezed?
A couple of times a day, maybe.
That's a lot of sneezes. And if you had a pet giraffe, what would you call it?
Skittle.
That's a very popular name for the animals. 40 seconds left. Would you rather win an Oscar, a Nobel Prize, or the World Cup?
The World Cup.
The World Cup. What mode of transport do you think we'll be using to get to work in 2053?
A lot of flying cars.
Flying cars. 22 seconds left. If dogs could talk, what would they tell us?
I don't know.
10 seconds left, Mariano. What's your favourite type of sandwich?
With salmon.
Very nice. 3 seconds left. Is it acceptable to eat cereal for dinner?
Yes, it is. Why not? Actually, sometimes dinner for some people is breakfast for others, so...
It is indeed. Time is up. Oh. How many Skittles
I got
have
a few.
You got?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
8 Skittles for Mariano. Well, look, that's a pretty good tally. That's on par with some of our best Skittlemania appearances. Well, look, Mariano, thank you for joining us today on the Money Bites podcast. We really do look forward to keeping up to date with studentfinance.com and seeing how you guys get on.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, Future Finance. How can I help?
Hello. I'm calling today because I've got a slightly odd request. It's not exactly conventional, but we'll see what we can do. In my retirement, I've been spending a lot of time with my dog Samson, and he has a phenomenal knack for the act of circus performance. You see, he has this majestic ability to entertain crowds and bring smiles to people's faces. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But the problem is that the animal entertainment industry, it's very much a closed door for those who aren't in the know. And especially when one doesn't have a formal education. So me and Samson were wondering whether we could apply for a student loan so he could attend one of the country's more reputable animal circusry schools.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. Yes. Let me have a look, because obviously here we only fund certain institutions. And now the reason for that is that here we're a private student loans company, yes. So we do only fund certain institutions.
Yes. Just a double check, just to be doubly sure. It is a possibility, yes, that you could fund an animals degree. I assume this isn't your first dog course you've funded.
Actually, been asked that before. Normally, it would just be students. So obviously, it would be obviously a loan for
Samson,
you. So
Samson,
would you be attending?
Samson. Sorry, the dogs. Samson, back to the trapeze.
Okay.
Wednesday mornings of practicing. Sorry, Samson's going. Sorry, so what's
No, that's okay. So if I'm honest, I don't think that is, but I would like to check for you. So
okay.
I'm just going to pop you on a brief hold. Is that okay?
Yeah, not a problem.
So, of course, obviously, we could fund, obviously, yourself if it was you attending somewhere.
Yes.
However, if it was for an animal, we wouldn't fund that, I'm afraid.
No loans for animals.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes
dog,
perfect. I understand. It was a slightly odd request.
It's good to ask anyway.
Yes, even if you ever open an animal loans department, do let me know. But otherwise, not to worry.
And that's all we have time for on this week's Money Bites. Thanks to Mariano of studentfinance.com. And please do remember to review, subscribe, and why not visit us at Smart Money People. Goodbye.